start your day. The Tourway Northwest London, Wednesday, 8th of Av, 26th of July, Rabbi Amram and Nemeth Shlita, Eicho, Per Gimel, Tehei. This week's Tourway is sponsored by family, the Lang Lechvod, Havochrim Hayakorim, Mea Nisim Nerior, Rechaim Shmuel Eliyahu Nerior, Warrants. Shegiula Oha Mitzvah will say Shiva Zul Hashem Yisborach. The mitzvah is coming Shabbos Parshas with Chanan Shabbos Nachamu.
Fast. Has it been introduced?
Yeah.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So, it's lucky Tisha B'Av next week because there are still two more prakim of Eicha. So it's lucky for you. For me, I don't mind, but you'll have another speaker on Wednesday or Thursday. But,
No,
right. So I was thinking we could do the connection to Elul and Eicha for the first 4 weeks of Elul. No, I'm being right. That's it. This is it after that, but thank you for the 3 week series on it. I don't have now the printer in the JLE is broken, so therefore my Makairos are normally on. I normally print it all before. I don't have to get loads of sparring. Now it doesn't work, but we will do our best. So we start with Perek Gimel and one thought from Perek Daled. And I think the discussion would be based upon, and the lessons we would learn, what I would say are three. One will be an essence of whether tefillahs are accepted nowadays at all, and whether it's worth davening since the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, because there's not really much connection to Hashem anymore. And that's a big discussion in Eicha, in the Medrash, and in the Mefarshim on the Torah as well. And then number two, with the connection to the second Beis HaMikdash and 1948, when the State of Israel was born, and what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has to say about that. That will be number two, and it's not a very controversial kind of shared. I don't think it affects either side of any politics to do with Eretz Yisrael at all. It's just to do with the fact that there is an Eretz Yisrael in the world that belongs to Jewish people. And the third would be in Perek Daled, which is, do we categorize all Edens the same, or is there a hierarchy, even amongst the Midah Chachamim, of who you value and who you don't value? Which is an interesting question, I think. Presumably you would say everyone is equal. Especially, we're not ones to value tzaddikim as to who we think are more important and who we think are less. Because peaks are high, we're much lower, and what do we know about who's closer to Hashem? But it seems to be that you do. And there is some sort of hierarchy in terms of tzaddikim and talmidei chachamim, which is interesting. So Bishus, my father, because it's a Wednesday, so he's able to be here from the beginning. And I want to start with Perek Gimel, Pasuk Ches. Gam also ki ezak va'ashaveya, when I call out to Hashem, or I scream out to Hashem, shasam tefillasi, my tefillah has been quietened and I cannot daven anymore at all. And what is Rashi? That's Perek Gimel Pasuk Ches. And Yirmiyah in Perek Gimel is discussing the aftermath. It's not exactly the Churban itself or the terrible catastrophes that happened, but more the feelings and the state that he and the Jewish people are left with after the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, from then, from the first Beis HaMikdash, and forevermore. Now, even though the second Beis HaMikdash was to come back, as we'll see later on in the Shir, the second Beis HaMikdash was a bedieved build, and it was never meant to have the same glory as the first, and Mitz Hashem, the third. And we're going to talk about that soon. But really, the destruction happened after the first. We've never really got back. The Aron didn't go back to its place, etc. So Perek Gimel, Pasuk Ches. Gam also ki ezak va'ashaveya. I call out and I scream out to Hashem. Shosam tefilasi. My tefillah has been quietened. Shosam tefilasi. No, it's... Well, I couldn't argue like Rav Leib Gorovitz, I couldn't say the shove. I made a mistake the other way. So I haven't got really any leg to stand on with that one. But I do know the difference. The right is the sh, and the left is this, like the samach sounding. That's what they taught us, and I carry on that tradition very strongly too. No, but fair enough, it's sosam tefilasi. Says Rashi, sosam chaloinos harakia befaneha. The windows of the sky are closed before us. And that means if you daven, your tefillahs are not accepted at all. I know it's a bit of a shock. And the Gemara, I only focused, interesting, I was learning the fifth parak of brachas. And I was wondering how to start the shir. And this was yesterday morning, the morning before. And I guess it's always a sign if you're learning, if you're up to in the Gemara, where the parasha is up to, the Megillahs are up to, it's a sign from Hashem. Or it means you're a year behind, right? In the pessimistic way of looking at it. But either way, it's a nice sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu normally. And we hit this pasuk. We learn through the Gemara with my Charusa Ron. I don't know if he's listening or not. But Amar Rebbe Lazar. Rebbe Lazar says, not everyone agrees with this, maybe. Miyom Shacharav Beis HaMikdash is a very famous Gemara, which I think many of us have heard, but if you think about it, it's quite a shocker. From the day the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, Ninalu Sharei Tfila. The gates of prayer are completely shut. Ninalu, Ni'ila, right? Shnema, like it says in Eicha, in our pasuk, Gam Ki Ezak Vasaveya, Sosam Tfilasi, my Tfila has been quietened. I think the Torah Tumima brings that could be short as well with drashas. That's why I could. I'm just saying. Anyway, sasam tefilasi. Ba'afa pisha shari tefila ninalu. And even though the gates of tefila have been closed, shari dima lo nina. Don't worry, because you can cry in davening. The way Rashi explains that the tears don't need to be pushed in through a tefila. A tear Hakadosh Baruch Hu sees straight away, like a parent seeing a child's tear, and they know what they're feeling. They don't have to beg for it. Every parent gets upset when they see the child's tear, and shari tefillah, the gates are always open, a tear will always be recognized. Shenema, like it says, shima tefillasi Hashem, v'shavasi azina el demasi al techarash, don't push away my tear has got in right inside, and even though the tefillah hasn't got inside. So the tefillah is waiting outside, the gates are shut, and the Gemara carries on to say there's a big separation, a thick wall between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu since the Chorban, but if you cry, then nothing is existent you can get in. But that means there's no point in coming to shul at all. So the answers you always get, it doesn't mean that, but it does mean that. It's pretty clear. There's gates and it's shut. And I never like it doesn't really mean, because it's very off-putting. Why am I learning it at all? And why am I coming to shul at all? Right? I'm coming to shul, but I should know, when you come into shul, unless you're crying, Rav Dessler explains it's a michtam aliyah chelek dalet, that it literally means your tefillah has to be heartfelt, you have to cry. It's not that the tear is a result of the way you're feeling at the time towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu or towards what you need. And if you don't have that, then your tefillahs are shut. So I asked a few people. People said, "Oh, no, it doesn't mean it's hyperbole." If you're slightly more educated, yeah, it's a mean. Well, so what does it mean? So what do you learn from it then? It's not as close. But the Gemara is very, very clear. It's shut or not shut. And there's no point having shachris mincha marav at all, unless you can cry. So I went to shul yesterday, I did an observation. I asked everyone in Hargos, do you cry when you daven? Answer this questionnaire for me and send it back. I went to Rav Chumas and did the same. And everyone said, I cry in Ne'ilah. No, I'm joking, right? But no one cries. I went to check. And, you know, we should tell people just to go home. The Satmar Rebbe asked this question, I was glad to find. In Divrei Yoel, I don't have the text with me here, but it's a Parshas Akev. He says exactly this question. He said, we should stop all davening. It doesn't make any sense. If everything is shut, you're taking the Gemara literally, then... The Torah Tumima also asked a question. The Torah Tumima, the Baruch Epstein, the nephew of the Netziv, right, he asked the same question as well. If you go through Eicha, like I was trying to do, the Al-Sheikh is very difficult, and there's other Purushim are very difficult to understand. The Torah Tumima, classically, like on the Chumash, is very clear to understand, and it gives you very, very, very clear understanding of the Pesukim, the Pasha Pshat. And he says, don't worry, first of all. The first way you can easily get out is what? Why are Tfilah still accepted? Because it was the expression of the pasuk, the grammar. Gam ki ezak va'ashaveya. When I call out and I scream out. It's not a Lashon Rabbim, it's a Lashon Yachid. So you put this chazal in context of all the other chazals. Hein kal kabre lo yimas, like the Gemara early on in Brachas. Hashem never rejects the tefillah of the man. Korban Sivan never gets rejected. We daven with other people, we're okay. And therefore we're okay. So it's fine. When you daven by yourself, you won't be, your tefillah will hard to be accepted unless you cry. It doesn't really help you fully, because if you go on holiday now for 2 weeks, you're not going to have a minion. Then what are you going to do then? At holiday, and then, you know, if you're sitting by a pool, it's not conducive to tears. It's conducive to water, but it's not a very emotional time. You know, if you're sitting on Tisha B'Av, maybe tomorrow, maybe our tefillahs will be accepted on Tisha B'Av when you think about the sad things that happen to yourself and your family and the Klal Yisrael. Even then, you don't see really anyone crying sadly anymore, but that's the state of where we are. But still, you go on holiday and you're sitting in your shorts, you're about to go have a barbecue. You're not really in a tears frame of mind, unless your holidays are pretty different. You go to Yad Vashem, I don't know, but what are you going to do? So you're davening by yourself. How your tefillahs will be accepted. So it says the Torah to Mima. Also, Aseret made Truva, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is closer, and El as well. But the main difference between Yochid and Rabban, which is a very easy answer, as far as I understand, to where. Also, says the Torah to me, I don't know where he gets this from, Rabbi Eliezer is a Das Yochid. He doesn't bring any Makar for this. No one agrees with this. Rabbi Eliezer comes along and he says, Hashem doesn't listen to you anymore. I guess he has the authority to say that, the Talmud Chacham like him, a nephew of the Nesev, the son of the Aruch HaShulchan. You know, we couldn't get up and say such a thing. He says he was a Das Yachid. He must have a Makar, but I couldn't find it in the Purushim. And really, Yirmi was talking about in the aftermath of the destruction itself. Just after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, when Yerushalayim was still burning and everyone was going down, you could get exiled from Eretz Yisrael. Then he says, Gam ki ezak ba'ashaveya, Hashem in the moment is not listening to me unless I cry, Asasam tefilasim. Otherwise, years later, when it's not in the peak of the destruction or just after, then Hashem will listen to you, even if you're by yourself on holiday, which is helpful. That means even if you don't have him, obviously there's millions of miles of minyan, we're not going to go through them now, but when you can't, right, then you've got that to think about as well. But the Sama Rebbe says, and this is interesting because I heard this years ago from Rabbi Wallerstein. Someone told it to me or I heard it from him. Someone sent me this clip once ages ago and it's relevant to me often because, you know, there's parts of davening that if you go out of gold screen, I guess, then ladies would like to make their own Kabbalah Shabbos or we'd like to have our own Megillah reading. And that's a question I was often asked over the years. Why can't we do that? Halachically, there's nothing wrong with doing that. And surely we should go and sing ourselves Kabbalah Shabbos. There'll be no Kol Isha. We'll go off into a room ourselves. Did you have any problem with that? Right? Also, like, there's Megillah reading. Let's have our own Megillah reading because you've got Rav Adi Yosef, who's a woman can fulfill the mitzvah for other women. You've got the Machaba, loads of halachas. Why wouldn't we do that as well? So beyond all the discussion people would have that's leaning towards reform and a slippery slope, which I think I agree with, and I understand that, but someone, I think Rabbi Wallerstein, he says, Oliver Shalom, right, that he went to a shul to speak somewhere, and as he was coming, he saw all the ladies of the shul going out to have their own some sort of prayer service. And he said to them, you should come straight back in. I don't know if he brought this story, but there's a story with the old Belzer shul, and I know there's Chassid Shiyidin here, and I'm not at all, in Belz, that was also as beautiful as the current one, as far as I understand. It was built with very thick walls, it was gold, and it was stunning. And one of the Belz, I don't know who the Belzer Rebbe would have been, who would have built it, who would that have been, what would be his name? Rabaron Belz, right? So he didn't let, allegedly, I can't verify the source of this exactly, he didn't let, even though the shul was nearly finished, the Ezra's Noshim wasn't finished. And he said, you can't daven in the shul until the Ezra's Noshim is finished and the ladies come in. Yeah?
It's the early answer of Shiva.
Right. Okay. And Rabbi Wallerstein told the women in the shul, the ladies in the shul, you have to stay in as well. And the Satmar Rebbe said, in Parashas Akev, that even though you're right, most fillers don't have tears, and most of them won't get in. He doesn't differentiate like we've done between Yochid and Rabbim, or between the time of Yirmiyah and the nowadays, where Hashem's anger maybe is not as strong as the Torah Tmima says. He says, you're right, most people don't cry, but there'll be a tzaddik in Shul who's crying, or there'll be someone who has a heartfelt tefillah somewhere that he's going through something that will bring some tears in their tefillah, and that will open the gates for everyone else. That's the Hasidic answer. Can I just give you a second? And that will open the gates for everyone else. And if you have one person, then that will take everyone else's with them. And therefore, going back to the ladies in the Shul, ladies have more of a propensity towards tears, as Chazal say anyway, right? And therefore, if that's true, then you need the Ezra's Noshim in the shul to open the gate, so all our dry tefillahs, which are maybe not full of tears, can then be entered. But I think either of those terutzim are positive ways to get through. If you read the pasuk, You learn the Gemara, there's absolutely no point in coming to shul. Or you could say, ah, it doesn't mean, but what does it mean? Right? So those are three answers. The Torah Tamima says, Yachid the Rabbin, or you could say then and now. Although I think the most beautiful answer, or as if the way I understand it, is that we never look, when you got the Memches Kinyon Yah Torah, you never have everyone with all the Kinyonim. We have a base of Medrash, and the way we understand them is someone has one, someone's good at Pilpul, someone's good at that, and together you're able for your Torah to be accepted by Hashem and to understand it. So too it's Tefillah as well. The Tefillah would be, maybe everyone's would be dry, but there'd be one person, says in Parashas Akiv, that would take everyone's with them and open the gates for everyone else. But that's also the reason why you have to be in shul. Presumably, if you go with the story of the Belzer Rebbe, that was one shul. Hashem would maybe take the tefillahs of the shul up. So Rabbi Wallerstein told these ladies, don't go out, because we're relying on you for our tefillahs. Which is the essence of tefillah was learned from Chana, and he saw her crying, and then the Shemayne Esther was replicated after that. So the essence of what the Dvarim Shevelev are of tefillah are definitely from a lady, and the essence of the tefillah was started with tears, and therefore, they're the ones who are going to take all our tefillahs up to Shemayim. So in COVID, I guess, when only men were allowed in, then maybe there was no point in going to shul according to this, because when you had only space for men and no ladies, then maybe you could argue. Okay, I'm just saying that in jest, but I think those three are beautiful turutim for these. Sorry.
When I was a child, the ladies used to cry in shul when she finished benching.
Wow. Which shul was that?
McGrove Lady Shul, Stanford Hill. It was during the wartime. And I remember asking my father, why are the women crying? Because they'd all lost people in the war, and it was you're asking Hashem for life, or
right.
Jews' tears.
And the men weren't crying at that point.
I never heard men crying.
Well, there's more. There's, I guess, yeah. So I guess so. There's the point, and that's how I think I put the pasuk into context of learning something from
it. What do you say for the Gemara? Yeah, it's a steal because you got all the Tudal Shachas
So therefore, with Minyan. Huh? That's the Satmar Rebbe's question. Is why would you daven Shabbos when it's on Monday?
But Yochid, you also need to.
Right, it wouldn't help then. You'd have to come up with the other Turutzim. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I struggle with the Gemara. These are the thing, the best I could do, and I think the most inspiring answers that you could find. But maybe you'd come to Shul, and you could think of some way. Look, how do we know exactly what happens taking up, and the gates are opening? I definitely don't know what that means. So maybe there's a broad understanding of it within the Kehillah, like the Gemara says in Brachot, you daven at the same time as the Kehillah, your tefillah is on the Shmas. So maybe that's when you should try and do it to be your tefillah, except you daven at 7 o'clock if you're davening in Shul. And maybe that's maybe you could rely on that there. I guess you could go further on in the conversation as well, with Hilchos Sibur.
Even a person down to be yechides is better off halucha lemasa to go into a shul and to down be yechides rather than to daven at home.
Isn't there machlokas there in the chayot on there? Whether not everyone agrees with that? Yeah, and I remember going through this in Rosh Hashanah with Makom Rina, where you daven the place where you learn or not. All right, yeah, I hear. That's a fair point. Okay, moving on. Moving on to, we've got two more points to say. Until we finish this year of Eicha, we have. Sorry, as I said, I didn't print the sheet, so I'm going to have to find it in here. 1 second. Perek Gimel, Pasuk Tesvav, Hispiani Vamaroyrim, Vamaroyrim, Hirvani La'ano. So that's. This is the famous pasuk, I think. The Hakadosh Baruch Hu has filled me up with bitter herbs, and also. He's satiated me as well, filled me up with wormwood as well. And this refers to the halacha the Ramah brings in Tof Ayin Vav and Hilchos Seder night, that you should have an egg on Seder night. Not everyone is accustomed to do that. We should actually eat an egg to remind you of the morning of Tish B'Av, because the night of the week that Pesach falls will always fall on the same night as Tish B'Av. But the question is, what's the connection between the two? There has to be some intrinsic connection between then Seder night and the night of Tish B'Av. And the Torah Tamima does come to the rescue again. And he says very simply, this is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we were meant to be, this is Rashi's opinion, this is a big question in Bereishis, Sefer Bereishis and Shemois, how long was the Galus and Mitzrayim for? Was it 430 years, 400 years, 210? And the way Rashi understands, as far as I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, is it was reduced to 210, right? And the Galus could start much later on from the time of Yitzchak. But either way, why was the Galus reduced from 400 to 210 years? Why was it reduced by 190 years? Simply because it was too difficult. And if it was too difficult, HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeemed us early. And I think there's a, I don't know if this is famous or not, I think it's the Yaivot that says, Vayamaruris Chayehem. Do you know this about Torah? The Kadma of Azla. Okay, so we'll leave that for now. So, it was the Vilna Gaon. So it was the bitterness of the exile that reduced them by 190 years. All right, it was the Koshi Hashibba that reduced it. But says the Torah to Mima, but if so, the Shibbud wasn't done. And therefore we had to go back and have more Shibbud later on. It wasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgot the Shibbud completely. It was that we had to pay that back. We weren't cleansed enough. We weren't in Golos enough. Whatever Golos, the Kor HaBarzel of Gaza wasn't complete. And that's the connection to Tisha B'Av later on. So we mentioned the Mara that we ate earlier. And we say, because it was so bitter, and we're focusing on the bitter part of the exile. Because Paro, like when we discussed Paro's Bechira, Paro went further than HaKadosh Baruch Hu maybe, as if you could say that, planned him to do. And the exile was much more bitter. And therefore Hashem had to take us out early. And if that's true, but the Shibbud wasn't finished. Hashem felt Klal Yisrael needed 400 years to be formed as a people. And therefore, says the Torah to me, but therefore we got later on all the Golos. Later on in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore that's a connection between Mara and between Wormwood on Tisha B'Av, which is very depressing, but it's also because of the bitter herbs, which represents the bitterness of Pesach. Okay, I would just connect something which Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says in many of his Sfarim, and he introduces it in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, on the first mission of Avos, in Parashas Bo as well, and to many other places, that he explains the difference between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought Klal Yisrael back to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, it was never because HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt Klal Yisrael were deserving of coming back. It was simply to avoid intermarriage and forgetting the Torah completely. Because it was getting so bad, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in the notes on Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have brought people back, it would have been forgotten completely. And therefore, you see in there that the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash was bittersweet. It was coming back, I'm happy to have you back, but it's not really that I want you to be here. Really, it's not completed. Very analogous to, I'm taking you out of Israel because it's too bitter, you're not really ready. I'm rebuilding the second Beis HaMikdash, it's not going to have the same features as the first, and he points out that all the Aramaic from Bavel stayed even when they were back in Yerushalayim. And the Aramaic name stayed. And you find the names of the month stayed, even though they were inherently non-Jewish. And really, we pride ourselves by having Jewish names, by everything different. And he explains, I can't say I've been through each line of how he explains it, I've got a few questions on it, but his theory that he says is that that Chazal, or the rabbis of the time, or the Nevi'im, wanted to remind people that this is a Golos kind of Beis HaMikdash. So your Aramaic names and names of months should remain, because that's really where we are in our heart. We may physically be back in Eretz Yisrael, but it's just to curb the assimilation rates. If everyone's going off with the girls from Ashur, the way he explains it, and people are forgetting the Torah, people forgot how to speak Lashon Kodesh, we have to come back for a reboost, then you go out again. And says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, interestingly, for our time, that's how this is in Parashas Bo, in the footnotes at the bottom, which I think is written by his Talmidim and not him, that's 1948, he said. That after the Holocaust as well, were we specifically ready for Eretz Yisrael to come back to be owned by a Jewish? When you go into whether it had Kedusha or not is irrelevant. But we know we go to Eretz Yisrael and it's owned by Jewish people. And we have a control over the land. That's simply to make sure to curb assimilation. Because after that, if not for that, he says, Klal Yisrael would have died completely. And therefore he says, 1948 was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha, similar to the second Beis HaMikdash. Almost like we're not ready for it. Really, the third Beis HaMikdash has to be rebuilt. Really, Mashiach has to come, hopefully by tonight, and that will be back in Eretz Yisrael with the full Kedusha of how it should be. But if you ask most secular Jews, how do you identify with Israel and anti-Semitism and the West Bank? And that's the discussion of many people, but that's a holy. That's got Kedusha to it. And that's what Rosh Hashanah says, the same in the Haggadah, but Beis Yisrael Mitzrayim, Beis Yaakov Me'am Loyetz. Don't only value the people that are Beis Yisrael, that are on the value of Yisrael. Value also the lower level of Beis Yaakov, Me'am Loyetz. They speak Hebrew. And they identify with some sort of nationhood of the Jewish people. And says Yaakov Kamenetsky, that was 1948 as well, in his understanding. It was Hashem showing, making sure that it's not completely gone by the time he's ready to redeem us and have Chaya Olam Haba forever. And that's helped. You can ask it, of course, that's given a name in the world. People go and live there, people go for holiday, people identify, people buy a flat. And he says that maybe not hasn't got so much Kedusha. It's not necessarily that Hashem is waiting to redeem. But it was if you could say this, Klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was a pragmatic move to make sure that Klal Yisrael doesn't completely wipe out. And that's the pasuk. I'll just leave off with Perek Daled, with one pasuk in Perek Daled. This is Gemara brought in Gittin, and the Medrash discusses this pasuk. The beautiful children of Tzion who were adorned with beauty. What's that referring to? And the Medrash brings a story that they were using a young, beautiful Jewish child for immoral acts, and along came. Let me just get the name, sorry. Rabbi Shua ben Chanania, and he saw what they were doing to this child. I think it's unclear exactly between the Medrash and the Gemara what they were doing. It was promiscuous, it was disgusting, and he was a young, beautiful Jewish boy. And they were captured him, and they were using him for their pleasures themselves. And he said, I'm going to redeem him. And it seems to be he would have redeemed him with any money in the world. Even though the Mishnah tells us in Gittin that you have to be careful with Pidyon Shvuyin. Because if you're going to offer millions and millions of pounds, then eventually what will happen is the Goyim will carry on doing it. Unless Tosafot says it's proper sakanas nafashas, then maybe you'll have to, even if it's a lot of money. But if they're not necessarily going to die, then maybe you should leave them. But it seems that Rabbi Shua ben Chananya, he maybe bent this rule, or he ignored this rule. And why did he do that? He took this child, he said, I'm standing here, I'm not going to leave this place until this child that's captured, I get all the money that will redeem him. He wasn't necessarily going to die, the child. And this will cause many other people of Klal Yisrael to be captured, and they'll know the Jews will always pay back, which is the pragmatic move that we do to ensure that this doesn't happen again. And the Be'er Yosef explains in Sefer Dvarim that actually the reason why he did that was because if you look at the Lashon of the Medrash, it's not really Lashon of the Gemara, Shemuvdach Ani, I'm sure, Bezer with this, Shemoyre Hayra B'Yisrael, that he'll be a Poisek in Klal Yisrael. And the Be'er Yosef differentiates between a Moyre Hayra and a Rav. And he says, a Ra, a Paisek, someone who, the Gemara normally says, if you're asking a Rav, if a Rav is learning one Gemara, don't ask him on another Gemara, because he's not necessarily in that sugya. But he says, there's a Paisek who only a few people make it to. And I'm not going to mention names, but I think everyone will recognize that. People who you can actually ask on every part of Shulchan Aruch the whole time is rare. Even from the biggest Lamdonim and Yirish Shemayim and Tzadikim and Tamidei Chachamim. There's a few people here in Golders Green who you can straight away ask, excuse me, what do I do in this situation? And they'll refer you straight away to a Prima Godim, to a Briya Halacha. And if not for these people, a Rav normally doesn't have the capabilities to do that. Because even if you've learned it last year, you've usually forgotten, you've been busy with many other things, learning something else. And the Be'er Yosef differentiates his own original answer, because there are many answers to why, what Rabbi Shua ben Chananya saw in this child completely. Whether he was just very wise, the way he translated the pasuk. But says the Be'er Yosef, he saw specifically that he was a Moira HaRav Yisrael. And he says, when the difference between a Rav and a Poisek is always going to be necessary, much more than a Rav. People need to know how to live straight away. We need to know how to pass on halacha straight away. If you're a Talmud Chacham, you're important. But if you're one of the few Yechidei, you know, you're one of the few very special people that can actually pass on straight away, then we need you, and we're willing to break the halacha of not redeeming Shvuyim. So B'nai Tzion HaYekarim was referring, says the Medrash, to a Poisek, to a future Poisek. And comes along this Rav, and he says, you know what? I can see in him he's got the ability to Paskin, as the Medrash explains how. And because he's got the ability to Paskin, I'm going to break all the rules. But I wouldn't necessarily do that for a Rav. And Halacha, interestingly, I'll just leave off, but Derech Drush, Halacha has a very special connection to the Beis HaMikdash. Because like the Gemara tells us in Brachas, Mi'em Shacharav Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ladalat Amashal Halacha Bovat. It doesn't point, and this is a question I often get asked, like, why are you so busy? Why don't you learn something more inspiring about how Hashem created the world? Why don't you learn about reward and punishment? Why don't you learn more theology? Why do you focus so much on the halacha itself? And you send boys to yeshiva for years, they're doing the same thing. Should we put the pot on the fire? Should we take it off the fire? Is that really what God cares about? That's like a very common question, which is a very good question. Learn something more meaningful, at least go through Nach and do something. Why? But the answer is, this Gemara, I think, there's many answers, right? One of the answers is, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Lishkas HaGazas was a place where they paskened Halacha, and that was destroyed when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and people who learn Halacha and Paskin bring back some of the Kedusha that was there in the Lishkas HaGazas. So we're reenacting something that we had in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe I'll be Derech Drush, you could say. But that's how we would save him. Because the Paskin, when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed and you have nothing left, at least keep someone who's Badalat Amash Al Alacha Bavad and the best person who's Badalat Amash Al Alacha. And that way, we still keep a bit of the light of the Lishkas HaGazis and the Beis HaMikdash with us. Shkoyach, next year, please God, we should be in Yerushalayim. You should fast well, everyone.